You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Nicholson Baker's latest novel, The Anthologist, chronicles the interior life of a poet as he struggles to write the introduction to an anthology of poetry he's compiled. It's a fascinating meditation on the nature of poetry and why it is and should be important in our lives. The book is published by Simon & Schuster, and I'm very pleased that it brings Nicholson Baker back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. I'm very delighted to be here.
The subject of this book really is poetry itself, how it's written, what makes a poem good or bad, and the lives of people who dedicate their careers to this pursuit. Why is it something that you've been thinking about lately?
I was an English major. Maybe it's that I have always been thinking about it.
Ever written poetry?
I tried to write poetry in college and didn't do so well. And I had some slightly crankish theories about meter and rhyme and why rhyme went away and why it came back. And somewhere along the line, I grew a big beard and wore a kind of hat and set up a video camera, actually, and took a lot of footage of me talking about poetry in the character of my hero in this book, and that's sort of how the book grew.
And is that important for us to understand that your narrator here is not necessarily you? The opinions expressed aren't always Paul Chowder's opinions aren't always Nicholson Baker's opinions?
Well, I'm always suspicious when people say it's not really me. I mean, it has to be. In order for truth and beauty and whatever it is that you have a chance at to work, you have to be fairly close to your own self, I think. I'm a very confessional, autobiographical writer. On the other hand, I'm a happily married guy with two children, and this person is somebody with my doubts and my interests, but who has had a small catastrophe and that he has to write an introduction. I have a terrible time. For some reason, more happily write a whole book than write an introduction. And I've had to write two, and I kept putting it off. And so part of this is to tell the story of my own difficulties with being the kind of master of ceremonies of a book.
Your range of interests as a writer is particularly broad, and your novels. The first one involved the thoughts of an office worker on an escalator. Mm-hmm. Then there were a couple of novels about sex. There was one of the world seen through the eyes of a 9-year-old American girl who's attending a school in England. There was a plot to assassinate the president. And the nonfiction books include a meditation on John Updike, an appreciation of Wikipedia's beginnings, your thoughts on lumber. You won a National Book Critics Circle Award in 2001 for your book Double Fold, Libraries and the Assault on Paper. And your last book, Human Smoke, was also nonfiction, an examination of the origins of World War II. And you seem to be alternating between fiction and nonfiction, but also it seems like anything that occurs to you can be a reason to write a book.
Well, I think it's because writing fiction for me is very autobiographical, and it's lonely in the sense that I don't talk to anybody. I talk to my wife and children. That's it. And when you do a reportorial piece, you get to call people up. Sometimes you get to visit a factory, and that's fun.
That's the only reason?
Well, I mean, it's fun, but it also, I love learning things. I mean, that feeling of facts kind of flowing at high speed into one's brain is an exciting feeling that when you're writing a novel, things are going out. It's a tidal thing. So you want tides to come in. You want the tide pools to be re-nourished with new organisms that are going to grow. Then you want the tides to go out. So that's the rhythm.
So most writers complain about the publicity tour. You obviously like it because it gives you a chance to talk to people.
I love it. I love it. I love every minute of it.
Paul Chowder, your narrator in the anthologist, is a somewhat successful poet who, as we said, is in the process of writing or putting off the writing of this introduction. He's had a crisis because his girlfriend is annoyed with him because he can't get this thing done.
Yeah, and that came I live in a house with a barn, and my wife would say, just go up in the barn and write it. And you want to write it, and I want you to write it. And And this feeling of not being able to do something that should be straightforward, 20 pages. What's so difficult about that? In this case, Paul Chowder has to introduce this world, this anthology world of rhyming poems. And he has theories about meter that he wants to get out. And I found when I had these theories that there were two ways. Either kind of set it out as a nonfiction essay on why rhyme works and maybe some new theories of meter. And I guess I wasn't brave enough to do that or something, but I felt it worked better to have a hero who has these theories, but he also just goes down to the creek and sets up a white plastic chair in the water and asks himself, what do I know? And I think that we all have things in our heads, and life events pull them out piecemeal, and it's sometimes more interesting to see that happen than to start at the beginning and go methodically through a topic.
Well, Paul despises free verse, feels that true poetry must rhyme, and yet his own poetry is free verse.
Well, right, and I maybe despise is for him. I guess it's fair to say that he has serious doubts about this thing that he almost feels he's gotten away with, because he's been able to, as you say, he's had a certain amount of success as a free verse poet. He knows the poetry editor of The New Yorker. He's able to drop a few names. On the other hand, what is the most momentous development in the life of a poet is if a poetry editor changes. Alice Quinn was the poetry editor of The New Yorker, and then she leaves, and it's Paul Muldoon. And this is a catastrophe for him, because he doesn't know Paul Muldoon. These are the kind of real life events in the life of a poet.
But why do you think almost all of the serious poets these days write free verse?
Well, because for one thing,
are they all getting away with it?
They're doing something beautiful. I mean, when it's great, it's fantastic. It's great. It's better than the rhyming stuff that, in some ways, poetry is so magnificently inefficient that all styles of poetry are fundamental. If you take a kind of core sample, most of it's not going to be very good. But out of any particular stylistic ferment, you're going to get some poems of genius. And, you know.
Well, so rhyme is alive and well in pop music, especially hip-hop these days. You even quote Ludacris at one point.
Yeah.
The question is how, distinguishing between good rhyme and doggerel, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was kind of pleased with the Ludacris one, because Edgar Allan Poe's Raven has this kind of pulsing quadruplet beat, you know, and the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain. And it's actually the same kind of quadruplet beat as keep your don't worry about them haters, keep your nose up in the air, you know. And these metrical rules that are not rules but just kind of ways of walking around the room are true, and they're important, and we have to be able to hear them, or the poetry gets a little too theoretical, I think.
Paul actually imagines running into Edgar Allan Poe at the laundromat or having Ted Rethke walk up his driveway. That also suggests that he's thought a lot about the history of poetry. Do you think that all writers know a lot about the history of what they do?
Well, I think writers usually have bursts of reading. You know, say every 5 years, I think writers, or at least this is true of me, you read up and you get excited about reading again, and then you do your writing, and then there's a surge. And my hero is interested in the love life of poets, because he's in the midst of a love crisis, and so he's fascinated.
He says the best poets really tortured, not just mildly messed up like him.
Yeah, he's got a little bit of a problem in that he's got some credit card debt, but he's annoyingly normal. And if he looks at the poets like Louise Bogan, Ted Rethke, Rossetti, all the poets that he thinks of as the really great ones were all these tremendously depressed people. Now, why did they resort to rhyme? Well, is it maybe that rhyme is a way of addicting yourself, in a sense, to something that will happen in the next line?
Is that the reason you gave him the name Chowder, because it implies something bland, full of milk and potatoes?
I don't know. I like corn chowder. I was thinking of kind of a corn chowder. I was working on the book a little bit in a house that had a rug pattern that was called chowder pattern. I like the mixed upness, and any artistic life is confused. It's a mixture of influences and of disappointments and of minor successes, and that's what I was shooting for, I think.
Paul says that translation killed rhyme. Is it basically impossible to translate a poem from one language to another and keep both the meaning and comparable rhythms and rhymes?
It is. It's, of course, difficult to translate. His theory is that we had these, and it's richly lyrical writers like Edgar Allan Poe, who were then translated by the French into impeccable, pure French prose, and then having been sort of laundered. It's like idea laundering. It went to Paris, and then it came flowing back into the United States and in England as something that we thought of as free verse. So it's odd, but somebody like Poe, the most rhymingest and rhythmicest poet there is one of the precursors of free verse.
Well, Russians will tell you that Shakespeare is a lot better in Russian than he is in English. And
they may be right about that.
Shakespeare does go off into rhyme quite a bit, and writes a lot of iambic pentameter. And your character, Paul Chowder, spends a lot of time arguing that iambic pentameter is overrated, and that the four-beat line is really more important to English verse. So is that why you don't mention Shakespeare?
Well, let's take an iambic pentameter from Shakespeare. That time of year thou mayst in me behold is five stresses. What I was trying to say is there's many, many beautiful lines of iambic pentameter. What I'm trying to say is that there's a secret moment in that line. There's a lost beat. There's a missing empty shoe at the end of the line. Or say Poe, the Pope. True wit is nature to advantage dressed. Rest, what oft was thought but ne'er so well expressed. Rest. So it's not a five-beat line, because five is, any musician will tell you that a 5/4 time signature is not a good one. You got to have six beats, and the six beats, really, if you start dancing around the room with it or by the badminton net as I did, it turns out to be kind of a minuet or a waltz, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 2, 3, 4, 3, 2, true wit is nature to advantage dressed, what oft was thought but ne'er so well expressed. It's actually three beats.
And I should point out that the passages on these things are both instructive and entertaining, even to non-poets. Was that one of your goals, being able to explain the mechanics of writing poetry to people who think they have no interest in it?
I want to, because I'm an amateur in all this, but I also wanted to imagine what it would be like to be a working poet and have to explain it. So I bought a presentation easel and a bunch of Sharpie pens and sort of practiced talking about it until I felt I had a way of talking about it that made some sense.
Well, part of the problem is you say the word poetry and people are frightened off. It was interesting that Quentin Tarantino says that Jane Campion's new film about John Keats had inspired him to think about taking a poetry class.
Well, Keats is at the center. You know, talk about iambic pentameter. One of the first lines that hit me, when I have fears that I may cease to be before my pen has gleaned my teeming brain. I mean, the man had everything going for him. However, he did
except he had tuberculosis and died young.
That's true. And it was tragic, riding around on that horse with the blood and all. I'm sorry.
I think it's interesting that poetry often is very autobiographical, the closest thing to memoir in a way. And so all these monologues that we have here are about the lives of poets like Tennyson and Swinburne and Rachel Lindsay and Louise Bogan, Elizabeth Bishop. In a way, it really brings us back to their poetry, doesn't it?
It does. And the funny thing about the poetic eye is that there's no nonfiction poetry and fiction poetry. The eye, when you write a poem that has an eye in it, you don't worry about whether it's true or not. You hope it's true. You know, it's a strange thing. We divide up books in the bookstore and put them on different shelves if they're fiction or nonfiction. But all the poetry books are there, and I don't know actually why that is, but it's
and
true.
Recently, there has been a big debate in the New York Times Book Review letters page over whether Helen Vendler was right that Wallace Stevens was revealing a lot about his personal life in some of the poems.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm a little out of the loop with that. But Helen Vendler, she actually enters my book because my hero imagines himself on this infinite aluminum ladder climbing up, and above him is, Shakespeare and all the great people, and, you know, Jory Graham, the famous ones, and below are all these people in anorexia coming up after him, and he just thinks, why can't I just let go? And there's Helen Vendler over to the right in her dirigible filming everyone's ascent.
Now, you've alternated between fiction and nonfiction. So does that mean the next book will be nonfiction? Or does this book cover both?
This is definitely a novel because I live 12 miles away from where my main character lives. So the next book, I hope, will be nonfiction. I'm writing some longer pieces now about life, real life.
Nicholson Baker's latest book is The Anthologist. It is published by Simon & Schuster. I'm told you also like Dr. Seuss. So, I mean, there is a great rhymer, don't you think?
Oh, he was an impeccable metrist. He actually, you can open any page of the Sleep book and learn everything you want to know about how to make a poem scan.
Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.